Cosmic Shed. Hello and welcome to the Cosmic Shed Advent Calendar. For the next 24 or 25 days, we're going to bring you a short episode every morning. Now, to be honest, if I'd had this idea sooner, we'd have all 24 or 25 recorded already, but we don't. So you're going to just have to trust us on this, that we will get one to you every morning. But we do have one this morning, December the 1st, 2018. Let's see who's behind door number one.
So my name's Dr. Becky Smethurst. I am an astrophysicist at the University of Oxford.
Astrophysics at Oxford. That's pretty impressive, yeah. Right?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. The amount of people that you can talk to just being there is amazing. So my work is really focused on galaxies and black holes. So specifically, the supermassive black hole that we think is at the centre of every galaxy. And so what we think happens, sort of theorists have been saying must happen, is that when you, the black hole sort of accretes matter from the galaxy, it sort of grows and it gets bigger and bigger, and then it gets what we call active, and it throws out these huge energetic jets that can remove more fuel from a galaxy that it could use to form stars, or heat the gas that you would need to form stars. So either way, basically, by feeding the black hole, you kind of shoot yourself in the foot as a galaxy. So you feed the black hole and then you've got nothing left to make stars with. And basically, theorists have been saying that has to happen, otherwise our best model of the universe just doesn't make any sense. And so what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to find observational evidence that that is actually happening in like a huge population of galaxies.
How do you make observations of supermassive black holes at the centre of other galaxies? How do you do that?
Yeah, so part of my PhD was measuring the masses of supermassive black holes at the centre of galaxies, which is really cool. Like, if you told 8-year-old me that I'd be doing that, my mind would have blown. Which is really cool. You do it from just using ideas of Doppler shift. So the gas around a black hole is spiralling, and so any emission from that gas, specifically from like hydrogen, which we expect should be a very specific energy, a very specific wavelength, is going to get Doppler shifted, i.e. it's going to get red shifted and blue shifted if it's moving away and away from us and towards us. And so you can measure sort of the amount the light gets shifted and sort of how much that is. And then you say, well, that's how fast it's going. And therefore, just by orbital dynamics, you then work out, well, how big is the thing that it's going round? And then you can measure the mass. Then what you can do is you can then study the galaxy around it. And you can say what's happening in the galaxy in that bit, and then in that bit, which is further away from the black hole. Like, is there a difference in the star formation rate that's occurring in the galaxy? And can you say, okay, well, the bits close to the black hole have stopped star forming, and they've stopped star forming very quickly and very recently. So we can kind of point the finger at the black hole there and say that must have been because of the black hole.
Okay. Well, at what point in a formation of a galaxy does a black hole appear in the middle of it? Is it there to begin with? How does that work?
Oh, good question. That's the chicken or the egg in astronomy, really. So galaxy formation, obviously, if you have the Big Bang and then you start with this sort of big soup of particles and you've just got, you know, empty universe with sort of hydrogen and helium in it, and you start to sort of get these over-densities where you have clumps of material that are just sort of slightly denser than the rest of it, then they'll have a gravitational influence on all the other gas, and then you'll start clumping more and more until eventually you'll start sort of forming something dense enough to form stars. So the question is, does the centre get so dense that the black hole is just sort of direct collapse into a black hole from the gas at the very beginning? Or do you have to form stars first that then go supernova, turn into a black hole, because that's the heaviest thing, it sinks to the centre, and then everything else then sort of grows from there? And it's a big question, actually. We're not entirely sure still what happens, and there's all these sort of arguments for the different sort of processes that are going to end up forming these black holes, and how quickly they can form them to sort of the supermassive level, where they're sort of like 10,000 times the mass of the sun, up to like a billion times the mass of the sun. So big questions.
I mean, I'm trying to picture the stars near a black hole, right? And in my head, that means I'm thinking of event horizon, I'm thinking of interstellar, I think that's about it. But what? How far away are the stars near a black hole for them to still be stars and not being kind of?
Yeah, good question. Right. So the only time we've ever really observed stars around a supermassive black hole is for our own Milky Way. There's this amazing GIF that or video. Like, if people haven't seen it, they should. It's like sort of 10 years worth of data of the stars in the very center of the galaxy looping around something, and you know you can see they're sort of moving very slowly, and as they get closer they get faster and faster as they loop around this black hole, and they're about, you know, 10 light years or so from the black hole, maybe like down to 5 light years. Yeah, it all depends on where this event horizon is, right, this sort of point of no return. And there was this really cool event that happened, I think it was last year, when we saw this sort of cloud of gas, and I say saw quite loosely there, but we could see that it was going to fall onto the black hole, basically in the center of the Milky Way. And so we observed it sort of for the first time, but obviously you get to the event horizon, you don't get any more information back. So we sort of saw it stall, basically, and the sort of people are still observing like what's happening now, because obviously it's kind of a long process in terms of astronomy, right? It's not going to happen within a couple of weeks, it's going to happen over years, millennia even.
If there's supermassive black holes at the centre of a galaxy, why doesn't eventually everything in the galaxy get swallowed into that?
Yeah, so good question. Mainly because a lot of things in the galaxy are already moving themselves. So the black hole is definitely at that sort of gravitational driving seat in the middle, right? It's really in control, despite the fact that it's, you know, smaller than the solar system. And the galaxy is like 100,000 light years across. It still is sort of the bottom of the potential well of the galaxy. So it does control a lot of the orbits, but stable orbits are those which are like circular within our own solar system. You could ask the same thing, you know, why aren't the planets spiraling in towards the sun? It's just a different scale. They found this sort of stable orbit where they can continue, and that's sort of the, you know, the point of least energy, or whatever you want to call it, that's sort of the most effortless thing for it to do, is just to stay on that orbit. Obviously, if something perturbs a star in its orbit, if something comes along and it has an interaction with another star or something, then that could knock it off course, and then it could, you know, sort of fall in towards the center. It's a big question whether, you know, obviously our universe is expanding, so everything's moving away from everything, so it's not likely that eventually, you know, all galaxies will interact and we'll just get one giant supermassive black hole left at the end, because everything will be so far apart with the universe expanding. But when you do have mergers of galaxies, the gravitational forces involved in mergers of two galaxies, like just basically all the energy and momentum that gets exchanged, forces everything to the center. And so you do get these bulges of stars that form up around the black hole, that are then orbiting around the black hole. But again, they reach that point of like sort of most stable orbit they can be in, rather than, you know, everything sort of jostling for position to sort of get sort of into the black hole itself. So it's not something that we expect to happen, but it's a good question.
Just brilliant stuff, isn't it? I mean, yeah. Does it ever get to that point where you're just like, oh, I've got to look at black holes again today?
A little bit, yeah. Like, sometimes you get so bogged down in what you're doing. Like, so I went observing in May, so I went to California. It was, it's an observatory called the Lick Observatory. It's right by San Jose in San Francisco. And took some images of galaxies that we know have active supermassive black holes. And we were trying to find, like, if the black hole had given off one of these jets, these outflows from it, because it was active. And I've come back and I'm looking through the images, and basically you like have, you know, two beautiful images of a galaxy that you take off each other, and you get left with this like tiny little pixels that you're trying to attribute to like some energy of black hole. And you're looking at it just like, and you're getting so annoyed that you're like, is that real, that pixel that's lit up, or is that just noise? And you end up so bogged down in those tiny little details that you end up being like, oh, I don't want to do that today. And you're like, you just said that you didn't want to see if black holes were giving off like outflows of gas, so you don't care. You do get to that point, but at the same time, like, as soon as I end up talking to people about it and I can see how enthused they are, it enthuses me again, which is great. So
tell us how you got from 8-year-old you to you now.
Yeah, well, so I was one of those kids that wanted a telescope rather than a bike for Christmas, right? That was what was on my list, and I got one, and I was like looking at the moon and everything. And I just had so many books that I was you know, learning like constant facts about Jupiter and the solar system that I loved. And then at school, I didn't really like physics. I thought it was boring, especially sort of when you were sort of 13, 14. It was all about, you know, forces and light travels in straight lines and, you know, like measure how fast this drop of syrup is going to roll down this hill. It was so boring. And then when we got to GCSE, we finally did, you know, radioactivity and a bit of astronomy and the cool stuff, you know, and they hinted at for A-level you'd be doing like quantum mechanics and more radioactivity and, you know, like designing experiments. And I was like, well, that sounds cool. And I quickly realised that something that I've always had a passion for with astronomy and space was actually something you could study. And not just that, it was actually something that people were still working on. Because when you're a kid and you're reading this book about, here are all the stuff that we know about space and all the facts that we know, you think everything is known already, you know. You kind of assume, well, you know, scientists are amazing, scientists must know everything. And quickly realised getting to uni that we know nothing, right? We don't know what 95% of the universe is made of. So that's the interesting part about science. You know, even as a kid, I loved science because it had a right answer and, you know, the teacher could put a tick next to it rather than, you know, English where you have to write an essay. And now it's much more like that. It's sort of you have to prove to everyone else what the right answer is, because nobody knows, right? But that's the interesting part of science, is the stuff that no one knows. So I'm really happy to be working in that.
Yeah, no, totally. Is the gravitational wave stuff going to impact what you're doing?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, it all comes down to this sort of, how do we end up forming supermassive black holes, right? Because we think they grow through accretion and then through mergers of galaxies. And if you have a merger of a galaxy, then you're probably going to have a merger of black holes. And obviously this is what the gravitational wave discoveries have been detecting, is mergers of black holes and neutron stars. So that will all end up playing into this sort of big picture evolution of what's going on.
Are there black holes just in space rather than at the centre of a galaxy?
Yeah, so this is why we always refer to them as like supermassive black holes. You have to make the distinction, right? So there's a supermassive black hole in the centre of every galaxy that's probably more than 10,000 times the mass of the Sun, up to a billion times the mass of the Sun, depending on the size of a galaxy. It correlates really well with how, you know, how much mass and stars you've got in a galaxy as well. But then you've got the black holes that you get from, you know, just typical big star goes supernova, leaves behind a black hole, but that will be sort of like 50 to 100 times the mass of the Sun. And sort of that's what people think were the original building blocks for supermassive black holes, you know, sort of how they started. That might be, you know, where they started from and then sort of grew from there. But yeah, you can get these sort of smaller black holes, and that's what the gravitational wave discovery was. It was a discovery of sort of, I think it was 30 and 50 solar mass black holes, the first ones that they discovered, that had just merged in space somewhere, you know, from probably in like a cluster of stars. So you form, if you have a huge big cloud of gas that you form stars from, you're going to form a load of them, you know, up to 1,000 stars. And if you at least have two massive stars in that, then you're going to make two black holes at some point, and they're probably going to merge. So there was a long time that people thought that just random sort of black holes in space could be the sort of dark matter, you know, that we just couldn't see. They were called MACHOs, like massive compact halo objects. There was also WIMPs, MACHOs and WIMPs, and they were like weakly interacting massive particles. So it was like the black holes or some tiny particle that we can't see. And I think people are favouring the WIMPs more than the MACHOs.
Always, right? I mean,
everyone loves an underdog.
Right, okay. So you've got a YouTube channel.
Oh, I love it, yeah. So I only just started it up about 2 months ago. So I was doing a lot of YouTube work with Brady Haran. He does 60 symbols, number file, you know, computer file, all those kind of things. And I used to work at Nottingham University. And so I was doing a lot of work with 60 Symbols and Deep Sky videos. And I just moved job in October. So I thought, well, I'm probably not going to get a chance to do as much with them. So I'll start out my own. Why not? You know? So I'm having really good fun. I've done a couple of vlogs, you know, because I don't think there's enough scientists that really vlog about the day-to-day, what are you doing kind of research. So I've been doing a couple of those. A couple of, like, you know, unexplained mysteries videos, you know, what's unsolved. And then each month I do a Sky News, I've dubbed it, video, which is like what's in the sky this month that you can see, and then what's happened in the news. So for November, I was talking about how the Kepler Space Telescope has just been retired by NASA, whether Oumuamua is aliens. I think you guys chatted about that on the podcast as well, right? It's not, probably. In case anyone's still doubting. Yeah, I've been having fun, a load of fun with it, and just chatting to people. It's been great, you know, seeing what people want to see.
We can also see you on YouTube talking about science fiction and fantasy.
Yeah, definitely. So with the 60 Symbols crew, I did a lot of that. So I did something on whether you could explain the Upside Down in Stranger Things. Do you remember where Will gets trapped, right? And then they call it this, like, you know, sort of alternate universe. And so I said, could you explain everything that happens in Stranger Things if the entirety of the Upside Down was quantumly entangled with our universe? As in, like, you had the Big Bang, you've created multiverses that were quantumly entangled, and because Will makes things happen in his universe that we see in our universe when he lights up the lights, I was like, that could be explained by quantum entanglement. But then I go through why the theory is basically bollocks in the video.
It's a shame, right? Just watch the if anyone's listening, which they are, of course, just watch the first half of that video and then enjoy Stranger Things, because watch the second half, it's like, oh no, it couldn't happen.
I did have some fun as well with the new Avengers film that came out this year. So I don't want spoilers ahead if anyone wants to shut off for the next sort of 30 seconds, but Thor travels to a neutron star in the new Avengers film, and he's like, I'm going to use this neutron star to forge myself a new weapon. And my immediate thought when I was sat in the cinema was, first of all, that doesn't look like a neutron star. Second of all, would there, like, physically, would there be enough energy in a neutron star in order for you to melt this mythical metal? So, I mean, obviously they do some weird things in the film where they somehow manage to get some, like, crazy laser beam thing of heat coming out of the neutron star. But I was like, if you could collimate the heat somehow, like, would you be able to physically have enough energy there? So we just did some basic physics, made a couple of assumptions and stuff about the metal, and it was just a really fun video to make. I had my nails in that video painted, like, for solar system, so I had a different nail for every object in the solar system as well, and everyone thought that they were the stones from the Avengers, and like, oh, you have a time stone, and I was like, no, one's Mars, one's Earth.
Does that, when you're watching a film, though, does your knowledge of black holes, like, when you're watching Interstellar, are you sitting there going, that's not right?
It is a little bit like, it can take away the enjoyment. Like, I did enjoy Interstellar. It was very, it was very well done. They really thought about the science. I mean, when they were on that planet and they were running off trying to do something, I was like, no, guy on the spaceship's going to be, like, dead by the time you get back. You know that that's going to happen. And it was intelligent. So by the end, you know, that I thought it was a great sort of way to work in that sort of quantum reality thing they had at the end. I thought that was cool, but at the same time, like, you can't notice sort of every glaring error, you know, that they landed on this planet that was around a black hole, you know, and somehow managed to take off from it in a tiny spacecraft, but they needed a Saturn V to get off Earth. Like, it just didn't, you know, it's that kind of thing that you notice and you go, oh, right. So I do love the sci-fi that just really gets it right. Like, I loved The Martian. I thought The Martian was amazing. Like, the representation of NASA as just all those people just like, we don't do this. We're going to need more coffee. That was great. Everyone always thinks that I should love Gravity. Everyone's like, oh, you must love Gravity then. And I'm like, no, you destroyed the Hubble Space Telescope in, like, the first 2 minutes of that film. I can't watch that. I get, like, heart palpitations just like, no, not Hubble. But yeah, I do like the stuff that that really plays into that. And it, especially, like, I always look at this sort of, I love this, what's the difference between, like, sci-fi and fantasy? Like, where do you draw that line? And so I love fantasy novels that also put the laws of physics into their, like, magic lore and stuff. So I love, like, Patrick Rothfuss's work, like, the Name of the Wind trilogy that's out. That's fantasy rather than sci-fi. But, like, the magic in that, like, they, you know, if they want to put out a fire, they have to take the heat and put it somewhere. Like, magic still obeys the laws of thermodynamics, right? And if they want to rise something off the ground, it has to get lighter, but that means something else has to get heavier. So, like, it was like conservation of energy, like, still plays into magic. And I really like it when the stories play with that and work it. I think it's really cool.
So you read a lot of science fiction and fantasy as well?
I read. I think I consume more sci-fi by reading than I do on TV. I read a lot of sci-fi and fantasy. And that's why it really intrigues me of this idea of the difference between it, because you can... I was chatting to it. So someone came and gave a talk at my college when I was doing a PhD. It was Lev Grossman, who's the author of The Magicians, if people know it. And we were chatting afterwards about the difference between sci-fi and fantasy. And we were saying how weird it is that, like, you know, in fantasy, they world build and they build these whole new, like, planets, basically, right? But they've still got one sun and one moon, and, you know, the stars are the same. Even in Lord of the Rings, you know, they refer to the Hunter, which is Orion. And I know Lord of the Rings is supposed to be set on some sort of alternate Earth or whatever, but, you know, it's weird to me that as soon as they might put two suns in the sky or, like, three moons or something, like, a publisher's then going to classify that as sci-fi, even if they don't, like, leave the planet. Or, you know what I mean? Like, it's weird in that sense, I guess. And so I love the novels that really intertwine, like, sci-fi and fantasy and sort of all the differences and, like, similarities between them. I think they're really cool.
Yeah, are there any others that you can recommend that you've not already mentioned?
I really liked the Red Rising series that came out. So I think it came out back in 2014. But the new one came out this year and I've been really enjoying it. And that's really cool sort of futuristic sci-fi, but in the solar system. So it's like we've terraformed all the planets kind of thing. And now there's like wars breaking out and it's, you know, the ports around Ganymede, you know, are like warring with the lunar base and whatever. And it's really cool. But it still sort of weaves in this idea of fantasy where there's, you know, humans have evolved to be like different classes in the sense that their physiological makeup is different, right? You have like the reds at the bottom, which are just generic sort of normal humans, and then the golds at the top, which are almost like, you know, sort of superheroes in a sense with superhuman strength and everything. And then there's so much sort of like Roman mythology also built into it as well, and it's just done so well. And it almost starts off like a sort of young adult Hunger Games-esque book, and then it just ends up being this sort of like solar system wide sci-fi war epic. It just absolutely blew my mind by reading it. Like, if you haven't read it, I would highly recommend it. And there's a new one coming out next year as well, so really excited for that.
I've got a terrible admission to make on that one, which is that I started reading it, and then I was reading it in my camper van, and then I lost it, and and I found it about 3 weeks ago, and I'm like, oh no, I completely forgot that I was reading it. Now you're talking about it again, I'm like, oh yeah, I need to get back there.
You really need to read it. It's I think that, and then I really enjoyed the Long Way to a Small Angry Planet as well. This year, the Becky Chambers book as well, that was a good sci-fi. There was like, but most of the big sci-fi that I read this year was that series and the Becky Chambers series, so really, really good sci-fi.
I reckon that we could talk about this for a lot more, so maybe you'll join us again for another Cosmic Shed at some point.
Oh, totally, I love all this stuff. Yeah, like, I always love talking about sci-fi.
Lovely, let's do it. And what do you want to see in 2019 then?
Oh, good question. Read different things, I guess. I really enjoyed Alt Carbon on Netflix. That's got a season 2 coming out, right? That would be good to see in 2019. I know that there's a load of like books that they're making into series next year as well. So I know there's obviously the Wheel of Time series is now pre-production. And then they're doing His Dark Materials on TV as well, right? They're filming that right now. So I'm really intrigued to see what they do with that one after the film it didn't do the books justice, did it? So
no. Did you see the play of that?
I never saw the play, no.
It was amazing. Really, yeah. Really wonderful.
Well, hopefully it'll take after that rather than the film. So I was I'm really enjoying Doctor Who since the reboot as well. That's been awesome. She's so great. I just love hearing the Northern accents. It's like, yeah. It's so, so good. I love how like they've had to like subtitle it for like... Did you see the subtitle they put on her in the US when she said she was from Huddersfield? And it was spelled with like two O's and a Z. It was great. It was so good.
Fantastic. There we are. Black holes and science fiction and fantasy. Pretty much what the Cosmic Shed is all about. Thank you so much to Becky. And do check out her YouTube channel. Brilliant stuff. Really wonderful stuff just on astronomy and science fiction and fantasy. And of course, we'll post links to all Becky's stuff on the Cosmic Shed website, thecosmicshed.com. And hopefully... we'll make that happen. We'll get Becky back here in the Cosmic Shed one day soon. And that's it for today. We'll see you tomorrow morning for day two of the Cosmic Shed Advent Calendar. Thank you very much for listening.
The Cosmic Shed.
Science fact.
Science fiction.
And everything in between.